Welcome to Business Watch. We've been talking a lot about climate change, even in the aftermath of COP26, because fighting climate change is vital to equitable global development and poverty reduction. And international trade can increasingly have an important role to play in all of this. Trade can help countries adapt to higher average temperatures and more extreme weather events by offering consumers lower emissions goods and services, as well as facilitating the use of climate-friendly tech. But climate change may also negatively affect trade, as extreme weather events raise the cost of trade by destroying or degrading transport infrastructure, as well as reducing agricultural production and output. And importantly for us here in South Africa, with our still globally high carbon intensive inputs in key exports, green border taxes could serve as a form of green protectionism as input costs in the developed world rise in the wake of those countries' energy transitions and their own carbon taxes. Well, to discuss this, I'm joined now by Andrew Gilder, Director of Climate Legal, Gaylor Montmorency-Clair, Senior Economist at TIPS, and Dwayne Newman, Partner at EY Cova. Dwayne, firstly, on that point, congrats. What does the tie-up with EY Cova mean for you and Cova Advisory?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I think it's a big moment in the life of Cova, being recognized by EY and, I suppose, by the market that we eminent advisors in the space of sustainability, climate change and carbon. So I think we're looking forward to advising our clients, not just in South Africa, but in Africa, and supporting the clients on their green transition.
Yeah, it is undoubtedly going to be one of the big issues driving industry, not here in South Africa, but all over the world, when it comes to some of the proposals and suggestions on the table. And I've long worried that carbon border taxes could be seen as a kind of protectionism. So kick us off on that point. Firstly, what do you see as the nexus here between trade and climate change, broadly speaking?
So I think what we've got is carbon pricing mechanisms globally. And what is clear, I think with about the 65 of them that are floating around currently, according to the World Bank, is that are all different. Okay. So each country is implementing a carbon tax, a carbon cap and trade system. So there's no one common mechanism. And also we don't have a global carbon price. So with that unevenness, countries are now starting to look at, we've got these mechanisms. Do we now need to start looking at border carbon adjustments as well to make sure we start leveling the playing fields even more and not put our local businesses at a competitive disadvantage? What we do need to make sure we understand is that all these border carbon adjustments, they haven't been implemented anywhere as yet. So there's been quite a lot of debate over the last 10 years. I was reading a recent paper that was put out like 10 years ago on the issue. And so now we've got the European Union have proposed to implement their carbon pricing mechanisms and border carbon adjustments from 2023. But it will be sort of eased in. And also we're starting to see the US starting to make some noise around their greenhouse gas tax, which is effectively a border carbon adjustment as well. So you're looking at, I suppose, some of the largest trading countries in the world starting to think about implementing border carbon adjustments. So it's really important for the rest of the world, including South Africa, to sit up and take note.
And Andrew, on that point, I mean, what do you understand as the reasons behind this? Is it because these countries are now raising the price of their carbon tax that they risk becoming globally uncompetitive unless they create these tariff barriers to ensure that their industries don't relocate elsewhere? What do you see as the nexus of the debate here, Andrew?
So thanks, Michael. I mean, I suppose it depends if you believe what the Europeans say in their documentation or whether you take a slightly more jaded view. I take a slightly more jaded view. There's some very interesting language used in a lot of the documentation, and two things I'd like to pick up. I've been thinking about this all morning. The first one frames the CBAM, so the carbon border adjustment mechanism intended to be imposed by the EU from the beginning of 2023 in a transitional phase. It frames it bizarrely as an invitation to the EU's trade partners to themselves engage in greenhouse gas mitigation activities, as if that kind of stuff is you know, that we have to rely on the EU to guide us in these things. Firstly, which is a little bit condescending. The second thing is that in order for this to happen in compatibility with the existing legal regimes, there are required to be certain characteristics of the design of the CBAM so that it is compatible with the rules under the World Trade Organization. And again, it's very interesting. If you read the documentation produced by the EU, they go, oh yeah, we are of the view that this is compatible with the WTO rules. Well, I beg to differ. It really is about offshoring the cost of achieving EU emissions targets to EU's trading partners. So I I'd be very curious to engage with a debate on this. I mean, I was fortunate enough last week to participate in an EU dialogue on this. And when I was asked what would I like to hear from the EU, and my response was, I'd like the EU to listen a little bit more, please.
Mm. And on that point, I mean, Gaylor, you're in Europe at the moment, I believe. It got out just before the travel bans. What is the tone of the conversation around CBAM over there? Because what one can almost sympathize with the difficult situation that Europe does find itself in that if you're raising the carbon tax to a point that it becomes so punitive that companies are now going to offshore their operations, well, it's not going to have the desired effect because you're going to rapidly deindustrialize. At the same time, it wants to be seen to be playing its part in the global commons. But in a way, Andrew is saying that is clearly at odds with some WTO rules and the way people read those rules, and also without fully engaging in its trading partners. What's the tone of the conversation currently in Europe?
Yeah, thanks, Michael. And I think that's exactly right. You know, what we're seeing is that the justification somewhat is to protect, of course, the European market from what is known as carbon leakage, you know, saying, you know, if you tax the industries domestically, they'll move somewhere else where there are less stringent requirements. Evidence to date globally show that carbon leakage is very weak if it exists at all. And that effectively, if it happens in Europe, you're most likely to see it within Europe. So, you know, maybe moving from Western Europe to Eastern Europe or things like this. So, you know, the excuse of saying, you know, we're trying to protect our market doesn't hold much water. What is quite worrying, certainly from a South African perspective, but from the perspective of most trading partners of the EU, is that this is very much a unilateral move. You know, there was close to zero consultation, big talks about just transition, you know, at a global level. In the case of the CBAM, the just transition stops at the EU border. You know, there's virtually no support whatsoever to other countries to implement such a system. And most countries that are going to be negatively impacted are low and middle income countries. So, you know, the degree of solidarity, when it comes to that particular measure is quite worrying. And as it was pointed out, it's happening tomorrow and it's from January 2023. I mean, it's around the corner. Mm. Okay. This 3 year of transition, it will effectively start 2026. But I mean, that's not a lot of time for countries and companies to adapt, particularly when we know the current context that we're dealing with at the moment.
And do we know what the funds are going to be used for? So I can understand, but potentially, and to go back to your point about carbon leakage, I mean, €3 a ton of carbon up to now €69 a ton of carbon. That's a massive jump in a very short space of time. So I can understand the fear that carbon leakage could increase in that environment. But do we know what these taxes are going to be used for? Are they going to be funneled back to trading partners to help them with their own adaptation or mitigation journeys? I mean, clearly not. I mean, that would be laughable. So, Dwayne, I mean, exactly. Dwayne, where do you see this going for South African companies? If you're advising a steel exporter, for example, what are you advising them to do in response to this?
So, Michael, I think the reality is one is understand, is your industry impacted? Okay, so we've got what? We've got iron and steel, aluminium, fertilizers, who are going to be impacted by the by this. Yes, do we know it's only 2026? Okay, but the reality is you need to understand the rules. You need to start putting measurement in place. Okay, those rules are also quite a bit fuzzy to me around how you're going to work out the carbon content in the product you're exporting. And then the next thing is, okay, so well, now I know it. What can I do about it? Okay, so right. Okay, so I'm an aluminium smelter in South Africa. What, you just go and put up some solar panels to run your smelter? Unlikely. Okay, so the question is, what are you then going to do about it from an actual business perspective? Mm. And does it effectively block you out of some of those markets? Those, I think, are really important strategic issues that businesses need to think about now up to 2026. Okay, so we think that's far away, but in terms of strategic changes and realignment and business processes, it's not far away. So I think the recommendation I have to companies, make sure you understand the rules and regulations, understand where maybe you need to start looking at alternative markets, okay, where they're not going to be implementing these taxes. So again, it's quite a strategic issue that businesses need to be thinking about now and not wait for 2026.
It's remarkable reading a World Bank paper on this issue, and they just say, they just fob off the developed problem or the developing world problem of pivoting to new industries now. Oh, well, if you've got carbon-intensive industries and exports, surely you can find something else in the global value chain that's less carbon-intensive. I mean, how ludicrous. So let's maybe even dial this back a bit further to a more bilateral level here, country to country or country to block. Andrew, is there a place for the AU, for SADC to get involved here and start engaging with the EU to potentially postpone the implementation of the CBAM? Because there doesn't seem to be, there's no engagement that I can see that has taken place prior to this.
So that's a tricky one. Look, I mean, bear in mind that the EU also has economic partnership agreements with various blocs, including SADC, for example. So there is a platform on which those discussions can occur. The question is how, to what degree can SADC or an individual country push back against the economic might of the EU when the EU has made up its mind? And it's very, very interesting. I mean, I've been very fortunate over the last year to speak directly to a number of the technocrats in the EU who are dealing directly with this. And I pick up your point. They are completely oblivious to how these very complicated technical and political decisions will be impacting economies and individual operations. May I pick up one or two points about this? First of all, the transitional phase is with regard to five sectors, but they are five sectors chosen out of a list of 63 sectors that might ultimately be impacted. So it's not limited to a small group of sectors, be it very, very intensive sectors. Gaylor mentioned the idea is that you will buy what is called a CBAM certificate in your country of origin of your goods. But in order to do that, you have to go through a really complicated technical assessment process in order to secure that certificate. And while there are EU-imposed rules of how that should happen, we have no idea of how that would pertain in the South African context. And there would still need to be agreement between the EU and South Africa of the extent to which a payment of carbon tax in South Africa might ameliorate a payment of the CBAM at the European border.
Mm. So you're avoiding double taxation there as well. So, I mean, there are so many issues to pick up in this. What do you see currently as the biggest challenge here, Gaylor, for let's located in the South African context for South African companies operating in those sectors that are finding it hard to abate their emissions? And there's obviously opportunity here. We know Sasol's working on green hydrogen as a key solution for those hard to abate industries. But we're talking decades into the future here before that becomes a possibility.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, look, from a South African perspective, the CBAM, to begin with, as it was mentioned, targets five sectors. It's electricity, aluminium, cement, steel, and fertilizers. Effectively, out of those five, from a South African perspective, we really impacted in two, because we produce all of it, but we're only exporting two meaningfully to the EU. That's steel and aluminium. If you look at aluminium, it's quite scary because it's close to 40% of South Africa's exports that go to the EU. You know, when you look at steel, it's a bit less, about 15 to 20% depending on the year, but still very sizable. These are directly at risk from the moment, the CBAM is in operation. These are big companies. They should be able to adapt, but certainly, you know, they need the systems to be in place at national level. They can't do it on their own. So, and that's just South Africa. You know, think about even the region, Mozambique, you're talking about aluminium and steel, you know, for instance, steel in Zambia, steel in Zimbabwe, you know, and many other countries. It's not really clear at this point in time how the systems are going to be put in place. So it's very important that we get cracking now. We've got 3 years, maybe 4 years, let's say, to put this together. And then if we do not have this in place, the access to the European market will be significantly curtailed. And I think where I'm worried as well is that, first, from a South African perspective, we're very carbon intensive. You know, the carbon intensity of our export is extremely high compared to our competitors. So we would have to have seriously high carbon tax or to decarbonize very rapidly not to be impacted. And the second point is that it's likely to trigger a bit of a, you know, snowball effect. You know, the UK is looking at it. The US is looking at it. Canada is looking at it. Japan is looking at it, you know. And then, you know, pretty much the whole world's going to be looking at it. Then that means that if you haven't decarbonized, you won't be able to export in the future. That's pretty much it. And we're starting from a point where we have a lot of work to do. So we have to get cracking.
Michael, I just pick up a point very quickly. So in addition to what Gaylor's just said, the outcome around Article 6 of the Paris Agreement that's come to us now in terms of the Glasgow Climate Pact, that has very interesting implications for future design and tweaking of the South African carbon tax legal regime. So not only do we have to look at it, what our carbon tax does, not only do we have to look at it from what Glasgow brings us, but we've also got to look at it from what the CBAM brings us from Europe and potentially the rest of the world. Going to keep lawyers in business for years. Well done, Duane.
Well, I mean, what I worry about from a philosophical perspective is for the developed world to be dictating to the developing world how it should pay for this transition when it is the developed world that is responsible. I think, according to Oxfam, I think the richest 10% of the world are responsible for over half of the world's emissions. And now they're turning around and saying to the rest who are responsible for less than 10%, well, this is the way you're going to help us pay for it. It just seems to be completely iniquitous in that environment. Duane, just as we are running out of time here, in terms of how a carbon footprint is actually to be calculated, do we have a framework? Do we have something on the table that is usable at this stage?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, the reality is companies have, since the implementation of carbon tax, have been gathering lots of data, their greenhouse gas data, and reporting it to the Department of Environment. Okay, so that's been started in 2017. So obviously, as you implemented the carbon tax, the bar got higher because now you've monetized it. Okay, so we have seen companies now becoming much more focused on the accuracy of that data. Yes, are you only paying carbon tax on your Scope 1 emissions, so the emissions from your own operations? Yes, so it's not fully covering all the Scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions. So do we expect those kind of things to be really important? Your supply chain, looking at where you buy your products from, how carbon intensive of those. So let's take a simple example would be a car manufacturer. Okay, virtually our whole car manufacturing industry is based on exporting. Okay, there's lots of products in there which are coming from the South African environment. So whether it's aluminium, steel in those products. So if those aluminium and steel guys don't transition, okay, to a lower carbon footprint, do we also now have a longer term impact on our car industry? Okay, so those are really important things to bear in mind. So I think I agree with Gaynor and Andrew. So my view is you need to start understanding the rules now, making sure you fully understand your carbon footprint. Okay, there are methodologies. Okay, companies, a lot of the carbon intensive industries know how to do it. Okay, but understand how it flows through the whole value chain, not just your direct exports into Europe. Also, the indirect ones is where ultimately these could be impacted.
What would you, Andrew, like to see from a leadership perspective happening in South Africa at the moment? Because there's very little public conversation happening around what is potentially a disastrous policy for one of our biggest exporters.
So I'll be blunt. I'd like Treasury and Environmental Affairs to talk to one another and collaborate when they design these instruments and when they speak internationally. So let me be clear. We have a carbon budgeting system that is still being evolved at Environmental Affairs that is completely ignoring what's been implemented at in terms of carbon tax, or at least because there's no public conversation, we don't know if those things have finally joined one another.
Mm. And I mean, it's very late in the day for us to be calling for that. I mean, this is a conversation that should have started some time ago. Gaylor, what would you like to see in order to ensure that we retain our competitiveness for these key export sectors?
Look, I mean, the best response is to really get cracking on really action in terms of decarbonizing and setting up the systems. You know, I remember Atlas did a workshop back in 2013. On green protectionism. People thought I was off my head. I was like scaremongering, you know, that's never going to come. Here it is. It is. It's coming now. We wasted time. It's not too late. I think we must hear the warning that's coming. It's all wrong that, you know, we're being forced into this. But the reality of the global trading systems is that we are, and we cannot escape it. So let's get cracking. Let's fast track at decarbonization as much as we can. Let's put the systems in place. And understand the broader package. You know, we mustn't forget the CBAM is one measure out of many others, much broader package that is going to impact every aspect of the economy and of daily life in Europe and globally. So we really need to get cracking on that and get ready so that we don't lose out, and hopefully even we tap into some opportunities going forward.
Yeah, and let's maybe look at those opportunities. What do you see as the opportunities here? Let's go around the table, Duane, because there's certainly no opportunity for us to throw the might of the South African economy into a trade war with the EU. What do you see as the opportunities?
Yes, I mean, I think if you look at our businesses, are they transforming? Are they looking at lower carbon intensive products? Are they doing R&D and developing? So that's stimulating R&D. So again, I would encourage businesses to carry on looking at lower carbon intensive products. Okay. Making sure that you've got energy security. Okay. So I mean, it's a big challenge for South Africa today. Apart from all the carbon discussions, I mean, businesses does need to be looking at their energy security. And so looking at lower carbon options there. We're seeing those conversations are happening more and more. And then I think it's important that, I mean, Andrew touched on it around the carbon tax regime, right? Okay. Have we potentially got an exemption from these border carbon adjustments because we've implemented a carbon tax? Mm. So in the next phase of the carbon tax, those design elements of what's going to happen to the allowances, to the trade exposure allowances, to the carbon offset allowances, that kind of stuff is really important for government to be very transparent on. We need to be making decisions on that stuff now so we can understand how our carbon tax regime will benefit us in terms of all these global border carbon adjustments.
And government needs to be engaging the EU and all of these other countries who have these similar proposals on the table to say, well, you know, these are the trade-offs. So what do you see as the potential opportunities, Andrew?
I'm gonna pick up very quickly from what Duane said and tie it to something you said earlier. So the idea is that the CBAM links to and eventually ultimately replaces an element of the European Union Emissions Trading Scheme. The prices that you quoted earlier, Michael, 69, those are the current that's the current level of carbon pricing in the EU at the moment for EU installations. That should be instructive of the level of carbon price we should be charging in this country.
Oh, we'll extrapolate that out further, and we are well below that. I'll leave it on that point. Carbon border taxes, are they a revolution, or is it just more protectionism in the form of green policy? You be the judge. That was Andrew Gilder, Director of Climate Legal, Gaylor Mokmason-Clair, Senior Economist at TIPS, and Dwayne Newman, Partner at EY Cova, here on Business Watch.